Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And as I mentioned a few minutes back, we're going to start our program today by talking with you about wind turbine siting issues here in Wisconsin. There's a lot of support for wind turbines and wind energy in general. It's thought to be a clean form of power, and it certainly has many proponents, but it also has many opponents. And we'll be talking with a couple of people today who have some issues with wind turbines, and especially the siting issues connected with them. Two guests, Glenn Stoddard is an environmental lawyer from Eau Claire who knows the history and the legal aspects of turbine siting reform, and he's with us by phone. Glenn, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Also, with me in the studio, Jerry Meyer, who's been a rural mail carrier in the Brownsville area for 30 years now, and he lives within the area of the Forward Wind Energy Center. And he recently, in that center, recently erected 86 wind turbines in Dodge and Fond du Lac counties. So he lives within sight of several turbines, and that's led him to keep a diary of life after the turbines began spinning. So, Jerry, welcome to the program. Appreciate having you with us as well.
Hello. It's good to be here. And hello, Glenn.
Hi.
I'll tell you what, if you'd like to join in, maybe you've got some points to share one way or the other on this. I hope you'll join in with the questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And, of course, you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Give us a call or send us an email, and we'll be glad to get you on the air. And Glenn Stoddard, let's start with you a bit. Wind power, it's kind of a clean energy. Are you opposed to wind power?
No, not at all. My work has been, a good deal of it has been in the environmental arena for many years. Land use and environmental law are areas that I do a lot of work in. And I, you know, from a personal standpoint, feel that we really need to do a lot to change our ways in terms of our energy use in this country. But I've come to learn quite a bit about wind energy and alternative energies more broadly. And, you know, we all want that sort of quick fix. And unfortunately, what I think we're finding now is that there really is no such thing. And what we really need to be doing is we need to be conserving, we need to be more efficient, and we need to look at these technologies very, very carefully before we jump, you know, whole hog into something as a quick fix sort of panacea type answer. Unfortunately, the large scale wind energy projects are really disappointing. They're disappointing to a lot of environmentalists, but they're disappointing to people in the energy industry all around the world because they're not proving to be as effective as they were thought to be, but they're also proving to have a lot of other problems, and we can talk about some of those today.
Yeah. What's the status of the wind turbine siting here in Wisconsin? Do you have that? Those figures in your head, or
well, I don't have specific figures on the amount of energy. What I can tell you is that we're nationwide roughly around 1% of the energy that's being produced and used is coming from wind energy. I think Wisconsin is probably somewhere close to that as well. There are new wind projects in the works here in Wisconsin. Jerry's living with one right there that's a major one, and there's others that are being proposed but that are being opposed as well, and I've been involved in a number of those issues around the state. And so, to answer your question, I think it's fair to say that in Wisconsin as well as other parts of the country, there's a lot of tension around this issue. There's pressure from Congress with tax credits. There's pressure from the states with these renewable portfolio standards where the utilities are being required to increase the amount of renewable energy that they're putting into the system. And then there's counter pressure from environmental activists who are concerned about environmental impacts on birds and wildlife, and you know, in particular, in a lot of areas, from landowners and homeowners who are really, you know, being asked or forced in some instances to live right next to these developments, which you know, are really not conducive to residential living.
Yeah. And, Jerry, we have lots of callers online, but I want to get you involved here, Jerry, and maybe you can talk a little bit now. Describe your situation for us, where you live and the turbines and so forth.
Actually, I can see all 86 of them from somewhere on my property because I delivered mail in the area where 64 of them are constructed. I watched it from the very beginning. The one was put up 1,560 feet behind our house. And, you know, I always wonder when they're going to go online. We heard different figures. One morning I walked out of our house, and I looked up in the sky for the jet going over. It wasn't a jet. It was the turbine spinning. So that's the most common sound we hear, is the sound of a jet flying over. Some say a jet on the runway ready to take off.
So it's that loud?
It's very loud. I have five of them within three-quarters of a mile. We hear all five of them. We hear one at 2,480 feet. It's just as loud as the one at 1,560 feet. And sometimes the one that's three-quarters of a mile is as loud as both of those. So our setback in Wisconsin, the PSC recommends 1,000 feet. The energy companies recommend 1,000 feet. And here I am, three-quarters of a mile, and it's still very loud.
Yeah.
We hear that one and three-quarters of a mile away inside of our house.
So it's constant noise then for you?
Pretty much, other than on a calm day. There have been a few days. It feels like the day after 9/11, when the president grounded all airplanes, there was no sound. It almost feels like that day when there was no sound in the sky, when there's not turning.
And Glenn, you've been involved in, I believe, in some suits on this in terms of the what are your thoughts on setbacks and distances and so forth?
Well, almost everybody I deal with on that on this issue asked me that same question. You know, everybody wants sort of a short answer. What's the proper setback? Believe it or not, there are a number of different setbacks that you really have to look at to deal with all the different issues that flow from these kinds of turbines. Keep in mind that we're talking about wind turbines now that are generally proposed to be about 400 feet tall. That's, you know, in the neighborhood of 25 stories. It's a very large, building essentially with, you know, these spinning blades, usually three large blades. So when we talk about setbacks, I've started talking about this issue to my clients and to other interested people from the different standpoints that we have to worry about with these developments. First of all, what Jerry's talking about is noise, and that's a major problem for people living near turbines. It carries different distances depending on the topography. If you're in a mountainous or a hilly region of the state, like the Driftless area of the state of Wisconsin, you might have the noise, you know, going down valleys and going long distances, and that's been reported in the east, in the mountains in the east, in Pennsylvania and New York, where you get the noise going a mile to a mile and a half quite commonly, it's been reported. But Jerry's in a flat area, and he's reporting, you know, three-quarters of a mile. So, you know, noise is a big factor there. We also have shadow flicker. We have strobe light effects. Those are generally not, they don't carry as far as the noise. What we have a lot of focus on is this 1,000-foot distance here in Wisconsin and in other places, and that's a setback that was sort of pulled out of the air by the industry. And when we look at that, what we find is that that's really something that's geared towards mechanical failure. It's not geared towards the nuisance noise that keeps people awake. We have a manual from one of the major turbine manufacturers that recommends a formula for dealing with ice throw. This is from General Electric. And I did the calculations, And that comes out to just about 1,000 feet to be safe from ice throw from the turbines in cold climates like ours. We have another manual from another major manufacturer called Vestas. They recommend to their own workers staying away by 1,300 feet away from the turbines at all times unless they are actually doing maintenance work. So we're looking at, you know, just from the standpoint of mechanical failure, 1,000 to 1,300 feet recommended by two major manufacturers. But then if you want to look further and you want to look at issues like dealing with aircraft concerns, you know, crop dusting, emergency med flights in areas where there are people, small airstrips, you know, you've got radar, you've got approach issues, so you have to look at totally different setbacks there, just like you would with an airport or aircraft situation with a tall building. And then you also have the issue of signal interference, which sounds kind of, you know, it's sort of one of those issues you say, what? What are you talking about? Well, we're talking about cell phones and television and radar and those kinds of signals being interrupted by the turbines. And we know that cell phones and televisions are a major, you know, issue for people living near these. I'm not sure if Jerry's had this, you know, but I know some of my other clients have had real problems with television and cell phone interference.
I haven't, but I know of people that have.
And then there's two other areas I just want to mention briefly in terms of setbacks. One is wind rights. Ironically, the scale of these turbines is so large that they have to be spaced far enough apart so that they don't interfere with the wind that, you know, is trying to that they're trying to capture.
Right.
You know, and so they need to be spaced apart from each other. But at the same time, it's important from a property rights, from a legal standpoint, to respect the wind rights of other people. And so, you know, while the manufacturers oftentimes are worried about their own setup, you know, in terms of the turbines and the locations, they oftentimes aren't as concerned about invading somebody else's wind rights, which would preclude that other person from maybe putting up a smaller personal-type system. Minnesota and some other jurisdictions recommend a setback based on, my understanding is, it's 5 rotor diameters, which is quite a long setback. That tends to get you back even more than the 1,300 feet or even a quarter mile, depending on the size of the rotors. And then finally, and I don't want to downplay this one, but because this is very important, but you can't put an easy number on this, and this is environmental impacts. Birds, impacts on birds, bats, impacts to wetlands and groundwater. And the way these projects impact wetlands and groundwater is, if you think about putting up a very large building, it has to have a very strong foundation. So there's oftentimes quite an excavation with blasting that goes on, you know, to put in the footings for this kind of project. And in parts of Wisconsin where we have fractured bedrock, there's a lot of concern that that's going to open up fractures, you know, and allow animal waste and you know, things from the surface to
get down
into the groundwater. And then with wetlands, you know, the same kinds of issues there in terms of surface runoff and filling and grading and that kind of thing. So all of these things are, I think, quite significant. Many localities are looking at them around the state, and they're saying we have to balance these concerns, you know, environmental, social, human, legal concerns, against what we really get from these projects. Mm-hmm. And when you look at that, and I'll finish up here with this comment, when you look at that and you look at what the net gain is from these large wind energy projects, because of the intermittency of the wind and because of the difficulty in managing the flow of electricity and so on, they generally have to be backed up by coal or nuclear or gas plants so that when the wind stops blowing, you know, the power isn't interrupted. And so there's much less gain than anybody, I think, generally thinks of, or most people generally think of, and yet there are all these other impacts.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today with Glenn Stoddard, environmental lawyer from Eau Claire, and with Jerry Meyer, a rural mail carrier who lives near the next to the Forward Wind Energy Center, about wind turbine siting issues in Wisconsin. And we'll be taking some calls. We've got Bob and Jim and Ted and Paul online here. We'll get to you in just a couple of seconds here. Larry Mueller here. Jim Packard, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking wind turbine siting issues in Wisconsin with our two guests, Glenn Stoddard and Jerry Meyer. Happy to have you listening in. And Bob in Forest, Wisconsin's been waiting for quite a while. So let's go to Bob. Bob, hi. Thank you for waiting.
I appreciate it. I live in Forest, Wisconsin, which is in the extreme northeast corner of St. Croix County. And our township has entered into an agreement with a company to put up these giant windmills. The company that's doing it has made a couple claims. They're saying as far as the noise level, they run about 85 decibels of noise, which, you know, if that's true, does not seem to be that much. And they're also saying that their requirement for setback is 550 feet from a house, not, you know, from an outbuilding. If it's, they can put it right next to a barn, for that matter. But, is there more to this story that we're being told, or, what else could you tell me on those two issues? The upside to it is they're willing to pay obscene amount of money to people who are willing to have them on their land.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can get some comments from both. Jerry, let's just turn to you first, and then we'll go to Glenn.
That's the first I've heard of 500 feet. Our neighbor across the road they wanted him to sign off so they could put it closer than 1,000 feet, and he did. And I asked him, why in the world did you do that? Because now he says, what can I do? And he says, well, they told me that they don't make much noise. Now, an energy company down in the south part of the state in Rock County told the people there that they make about as much noise as your refrigerator. That is, I'll have to say, be blunt and say, that's a downright lie.
Yeah, well,
I've measured 45 decibels with just a little handheld machine by my house.
Okay, well, Glenn Stoddard?
Well, I mean, I think Jerry's experience is probably, pretty common with people living near these large ones. What I would say is that if you're, at least from everything that I know about this, if you're within a quarter mile to a half mile, you're going to hear these large turbines, at least when the wind conditions are correct and as far as blowing towards you. The problem, I think, is that the wind energy companies use these figures, these decibel levels, and most people don't understand the decimal scale and how it works. And they also don't understand what noise, can do in terms of interrupting sleep, which is probably the major issue that people complain about, with wind turbines, because a lot of times they're away at work during the day and then they come home at night and, they might be busy in the early evening hours, but when they try to go to sleep, especially if their windows are open, they hear this sort of jet engine sound or this thumping, thrashing sound, depending on how the wind is blowing outside, and they can't sleep. And then they close the windows, and they still oftentimes will feel a vibration or a thumping kind of sound. I guess to answer the question, I would say that the National Academy of Sciences recommends, and they came out with a detailed report last year, they recommend pre-construction noise surveys be done so that you get an ambient noise level in your area. That's the background before noise level. And then regulate the turbines from there so that they do not exceed either the levels that you need to get at in order to have a good night's sleep or roughly 5 decibels above the background noise, whichever is lower. And that's what noise experts are recommending that I've been working with on this. Now, the World Health Organization recommends roughly a 40 decibel level for nighttime rural environment noise in order to make sure that people are able to sleep. So if they're talking 85 decibels, I think the caller needs to ask, where is that being measured? 85 decibels is a very loud noise event. If that's being measured right at the turbine, then you have to look at modeling that out some distance And you need to make sure that the modeling that's being done is accurate and that it's taking into account the background noise.
And that's been an impact, Jerry, for you or your wife, I assume, or understand.
Well, Glenn mentioned sleeping, and my wife has been pretty quiet because she's afraid if we speak out too much, we're going to have our land condemned and get kicked off the property. But she's talking more. She's had a lot of trouble sleeping. She'll get up and read a book for 45 minutes till she's tired, mm-hmm. and then she comes back to bed and still can't sleep. Now, we were to our cabin 90 miles to the north of us in an 80-acre woods a quarter mile off the road, and it was so peaceful. I went out in the morning, and I always go looking for deer and take pictures, and when I got back, she was up, and she said, last night was the first night I slept all night in weeks.
Yeah. So, Bob, there you have it.
Thank you very much. I'll need to do some more research and get the other side of the story. Thank you both.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Well, let's go to Paul in Fort Atkinson next, who's been waiting, too. Paul, hello to you.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you all doing?
Good.
Hey. Good. First off, I'd like to thank your guests for making it today. This is a really important topic, and it's important that people understand the benefits of all of these things. I've heard a lot of negativity, and I'm surprised, Larry, that your show is focused on what I would, and I'm trying to be clear here that I'm not attempting to kind of be argumentative, but I would call these issues, and gentlemen, I appreciate, I'm just kind of like pre-stating my point here, I appreciate your concerns, but to claim wind as a major source of power is right, and to claim that it's invalid because it's noisy seems to be such a hollow argument, in my view. And, I mean, I would look at the environmental damage, or I would point you towards the alternatives to wind and solar that have devastated Wisconsin, that have effectively brought mercury poisoning to every lake in this state and have contributed to learning disabilities among our children. Those are really important issues. Those are the things I think that we should be focusing on.
You just mentioned.
And yeah, there are going to be inconsistencies. The wind doesn't blow all the time, but when it does, those plants can slow down and go offline and decrease the contribution to major environmental disasters.
Hmm. You just mentioned the health issues.
Downwind from a nuclear power plant. You don't have to hear it, but should there be an accident there, we could have a Chernobyl, which is 50, I would say, 100 million times more potent than noise damage. It's not to discount. I mean, there are means by which you can mitigate noise damage, as they do around airports. And it might be the case that the facilities and the groups that are bringing these plants online, that, you know, these wind farms, mm-hmm. might have to now stand up and say, listen, we're going to noise mitigate in these areas to accommodate the local residents.
Yeah.
But, you know, environmentally, to claim that birds and bats and other waterfowl are damaged by that, it's a known fact that windows contribute to more deaths of birds than all of the wind turbines combined. And I just really feel like this mm-hmm. is such an important topic, and we need somebody to advocate mm-hmm. and to carry the day on this issue, because this is going to be one of the answers for my daughter and for all of the other people who have kids who are listening.
Yeah. Well, let's get some comments from our guests. And Jerry, you had started to say something.
You had mentioned about the mercury in all of the lakes. Well, what about the health effects of the wind turbines? It's Nina Pierpont is a doctor from New York that's been studying this for a number of years, and it hardens the soft tissue in the body over a period of time, those soft tissues being your brain, your lungs. And we were testified at a hearing last week in Calumet County where it also affects the tissue around the heart. So that's a really important, viable concern. Something else to add to my situation is I had planted years ago 2 acres of pines behind my house. The neighbor has a small woods. In front, I have large cedar trees. So I'm kind of padded, and I still hear this very loud sound. I feel sorry for the people that live out in the open. We have a friend named Larry who bought 60 acres of land, built 1,000 feet off the road so he wouldn't hear the road sound. Now he has a turbine 1,100 feet to the west of him that isn't only loud, he has no trees to suppress that sound. Plus, he has shadow flicker across his house that from the time it begins till the time it ends is 42 minutes. At the meeting the other night, the energy people said, well, that's only one flutter per second. That seems, you know, kind of outrageous to minimize it like that.
Glenn Stoddard, a comment from you?
Yeah. I think the caller expresses obviously a lot of feeling and passion that you know, wind energy is a good thing and that it ought to be pushed. Because of the downside, I think, is really what he's getting at, the downside of our more conventional types of energy sources, coal in particular and nuclear as well. I think that the problem is that he needs to look at the actual numbers in terms of what we really are gaining from these large-scale wind energy projects in terms of offsetting those other types of energy sources. And the reality is, ironically, a lot like the arguments that we're hearing with some of the biofuels right now. You know, when you look at, for example, what's happening with ethanol, and I don't want to make too much of an analogy here because
we'll be talking about that in about 10 minutes
really?
Anyway.
Well, yeah, okay. I'll just say this. It's not a one for one kind of a trade off here. What we actually benefit as a society from in terms of the wind energy that we get out of these projects is really minimal. I mean, it does not allow the utilities to turn off the coal plant or the nuclear plant. They have to keep them on standby, and they're burning, you know, probably 90% of the energy that they would be burning anyway, while the wind is blowing and they're running the turbines. That coupled with the construction, costs, the environmental impacts of that, if you look at the carbon footprint of these things, it's pretty amazing. And I say this as somebody who really is a strong conservationist environmentalist in my heart and in my work. It's really not the answer, my friends. I mean, I really believe that the answer to these energy issues, and I think they're valid concerns, you know, mercury, all these issues, is real conservation. And there's a lot of things we could be doing policy-wise rather than putting money into the pockets of wind energy developers. But we could be putting that same money into conservation efforts, and I think we could go a lot further in reducing those other impacts and at the same time not causing these new problems.
Well, I thank you for calling. I want to give others a chance to chime in here, and there are a lot of people online, so I'm going to go to Jim in Oshkosh next. And Jim, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for having this program. I really appreciate it. I think my question pales in comparison to maybe the previous caller. However, one of the things that I'm concerned about is the aesthetics of this whole project, I suppose. Living in Oshkosh, and I'm a couple miles from the lake, and I can look over the top of my trees and see these things turning clean over on the other side of the lake. Now, the problem I have with that is that Niagara Escarpment is one of the beautiful geographic treasures of Wisconsin, and it's my understanding from somebody that's been working on these towers that the game plan is to put 1,500 of them all the way to Door County. And I cannot for the life of me understand how, I guess I can understand. What I'm saying is that these things are going to be around for the next 100 years at least, and they are an eyesore. Everything else being given, they are horrendous to sit here and look at. They're ruining one of the great beauties of Wisconsin. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling.
If I may, Larry, let me address that real quickly. You know, it's interesting. The folks who are concerned about these that I've represented are often, you know, allegedly only concerned about aesthetics, and they're, you know, some people in the wind industry claim that that's really the big issue. It's not the big issue. It's not the only issue, but it is an issue, and it's a valid concern, and I think the caller expresses it quite well. The problem, of course, is that there are a lot of people, particularly who are pro, you know, this type of development, who think they're beautiful. So, you know, it kind of cuts both ways. But I will say this. I think that we oftentimes downplay the importance of aesthetics in terms of our environment and our quality of life. You know, we only seem to pay attention to it when we've lost it. If we're driving down the freeway and we see tons of billboards and ugliness, then we think, well, you know, this is something awful. And I think the caller is expressing the loss of a view that, you know, he may have and many people probably took for granted until it was gone. Interestingly, from a legal standpoint, in Wisconsin, we protect scenic beauty under, you know, the public trust doctrine when it comes to navigable waters. Scenery is a valid public trust issue. But when it comes to regulating wind energy and solar energy, the legislature has passed a law. It's section 660401 of the statutes that limits local units of government from regulating on any basis other than essentially public health and safety, is what it boils down to in terms of these kinds of projects. So local units of government along the Niagara Escarpment cannot base regulations solely on aesthetics when it comes to wind energy projects. They have to, you know, they have to base their regulations on issues of public health and safety. But I do think aesthetics is an important issue, and I think that it would be ideal if the legislature would revisit that, because if we lose our aesthetics in Wisconsin, I think we're going to lose, you know, part of our tourism base. I think we're going to lose a great deal of the character of the state. And we have to ask, what are we gaining in return?
Jim, I appreciate your call, and I want to give Ted in Green Bay a chance to chime in, too. Ted, hello to you.
Hello. My parents live a quarter mile from the wind turbines in Glenmore in Brown County, and you can go right up to it. You can't hear these things. They are not loud at all. I don't get where people come up with this jet engine thing. I've got a friend that lives by the airport, and I'll tell you, it's nothing like that. You can barely hear these. And as far as the flicker effect, what about sunlight coming through a large tree over your house? It's about the same thing.
I would disagree.
I'm not talking about your other concerns, but those two concerns are laughable. I'm sorry.
The person with the flicker, or several people that have talked about the flicker, they said it's comparable, like sometimes your child will flip your lights on and off, but on a continual basis, you know, once per second.
Like I said, my parents live right there.
And I'm not exaggerating the sound that I'm hearing. I write it in a notebook every day, just what I'm hearing, and I've heard others call it the jet sound. One person said it sounds like a Chinook helicopter, if you've ever heard one of those while they're working, or that occasionally the old steam train runs through the town of Byron on the railroad tracks. It sounds like the steam train pulling a heavy load up the long hill from Fond du Lac to the town of Byron.
Now, unless your turbines are different than the turbines in Brown County, I just don't see where that comes from.
These turbines are 1.5 megawatts made by General Electric.
Yeah, these are too, I believe. Aesthetics, I've got a degree in art. Form follows function. I think they're fine. I just have an insatiable desire to buy a Mercedes-Benz when I drive by them. But other than that, they look great.
Yeah, let me just make a quick comment on that, if I may, Larry.
Yeah.
You know, there's a wind farm that was developed early on in the state down in Montfort, and the wind energy companies oftentimes, you know, point to that as a model, and they say the same thing that the caller has said, that, you know, you can go down there and you don't really hear them, and there aren't any complaints about it. by the same token, another early wind farm is up in Kewaunee County, and I've got some clients up there that I represent. The one in Kewaunee is, for whatever reason, quite noisy. There have been a lot of complaints. The utility there that built it ended up actually offering to buy some of the people out because it was, you know, such a problem. It really does depend on a number of factors. I mean, the wind, the amount of wind, the wind speed is a big factor, but the topography is also a huge factor. And so I think it's, you know, well, obviously Jerry's got an experience where he's living that, you know, he can talk about. It's not going to be the same experience with other wind farms in other places. You're going to have some similarities, but you're going to have some people who are going to say, well, you know, it doesn't bother us. Now, part of that is the topography and the amount of wind and the types of turbines, but it's also people have different sensitivities to wind or to noise, just as they have different sensitivities to, you know, other senses. And so, you know, if you have someone whose hearing is more sensitive, especially to the kinds of sounds, the tones of that are coming from wind turbines, they're going to be bothered much more so than someone who doesn't have those sensitivities or who's lost some hearing.
I want to give Sandy and Algoma a chance to chime in. Sandy, hello to you.
Hi. You know what, I guess I'm just pretty disgusted listening to y'all because you don't have any answers. You don't have any solutions. You don't sound like a conservationist. You sound like a lawyer who's representing these lawsuits and who serves to make some money doing this. And you know what? These windmills are, I live less than a half a mile from the windmills in Kewaunee, and I think they're majestic. I think they're beautiful. I think that they're the promise of other solutions versus polluting our planet and killing ourselves and completely obliterating the human race, which is what we're trying to do with the power sources we've got now. And the fact that you are discounting these because of aesthetic reasons or because they make too much noise, well, I'm sorry. Then you know what? Move closer to one of the nuclear power plants down in Kewaunee. You know what? It's like, get over yourselves.
Well, I tell you what, Glenn, do you want to make a comment?
No, thanks.
And because we're just about out of time. Jerry, a comment from you?
Didn't mention aesthetics. It's health. My wife has ringing in her ears, can't sleep. I've had nausea, lay down at night to go to bed. I feel sick to my stomach. I've lost 10 pounds in the last few weeks or month because I just don't feel like eating. I have a funny feeling in my stomach. We have a 13-year-old son that we adopted through social services that even before the turbines are thought of or started construction, my wife was concerned because it's like radar on MASH. He hears things before we hear them. I hear a siren. We'd say, no, there's no sirens. Well, then, yes, we did hear them. He's come home from school. He's told his teachers, his principal. Feels like my head's spinning 100 miles an hour. He has discipline problems at school, so there's an elaborate system we don't have time to explain, but he was at the worst level for 10 days about a week after the turbines in our area started spinning. Mm. Again, I hear five of them on a regular basis.
Well, I tell you what, we've had lots of calls here one way or the other on this whole issue, and obviously there's more to be discussed. I want to thank both of you for being with us today, and we'll look forward to future discussions on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate
it.
Thank you very much. Glenn Stoddard, environmental lawyer from Eau Claire, who knows the history and the legal aspects of turbine siting reform, as we've talked with him. Jerry Meyer, a rural mail carrier in Brownsville, the Brownsville area, who lives within the area of the Forward Wind Energy Center. They've got 86 wind turbines in Dodge and Fond du Lac County. So it's an issue that I'm certain we're going to be discussing in the future, and look forward to more visits about it. Thank you both again for being with us. Appreciate it very much. Coming up, we're going to be talking, here's another issue that's gotten a lot of controversy, and that issue is the issue of biofuels. There's a little bit of a backlash on biofuels, and we'll be taking a look at biofuels, the backlash, and bioenergy grants with a couple of guests, Chuck Martin of the Wisconsin State Journal and Don Wickert, who is Focus on Energy's director of its renewable energy program. We'll be visiting with them next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.